Evan Turner is a former professional basketball player who is currently making his opinions known on the excellent Point Forward podcast co-hosted by Andre Iguodala. The Point Forward podcast is going to be at South by Southwest this Sunday, March 10th, for a live recording that includes special guest Megan Rapinoe. Go to sxsw.com for tickets and info. And Evan is nice enough now to join me for a few minutes to talk about that and more. Evan, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I can't complain. Just living the dream. How's everything with you?
It's good. I wanted to show you my shirt real quick before we get going here. They're not, well, people can appreciate it, but I think you can get some added appreciation as a Chi-Town native.
Okay, I'm loving that. I like that. A little Walter Payton with the Chicago flag headband. We still brag on that 85 championship like it was just yesterday.
Hold on tight. Your only other option is a Rex Grossman-led Bears team to the Super Bowl, you know? Nobody wants to talk about that if they don't have to.
Yeah, and that was the only time Payton won a game he was supposed to, right? when he said that. That was he beat Rex Grossman and always struggled with time. The irony.
Right about that.
Yeah.
But hey, the ultimate highlight is Devin Hester returning that opening kickoff back for a touchdown, and now he's a Hall of Famer too. So,
yeah, no, that's big time. I used to like D-Train too. What was his name? For Michigan State, the running back Thomas.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. He was what was it? Number 35, DeAnthony or something? It was something weird.
DeAnthony Thomas. That's who it was. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He was a dog. I was big into him, and then obviously Mike Brown. They were good. Jay Cutler, he was our most talented before the big dog Justin Fields got there. But I mean, fucking Parkey, bro. If Parkey makes the field goal, bro, like we'd be fine.
Here's my problem with Cutler, because I lived in Chicago from 2009 to 2015, and so I was there working in sports media during the height of the Jay Cutler era. Yeah, he was talented as a quarterback. And you can speak to this as somebody who played high-level college and professional basketball. Dude, his demeanor was always so terrible. And if you're the quarterback of your football team and you've got that mopey expression on your face at all times, and there's memes being made of you with a fake cigarette sticking out of your mouth, it's really hard for dudes to rally around you, you know?
Yeah, and that's what Alshon Jeffrey was saying. Alshon Jeffrey told me one time, so he's so cold, but he's just an asshole. And, like, every time you heard, like, stories, you'd be like, yeah, Jay Cutler told me to leave him the hell alone. Like, Jay Cutler told me. And then he gets divorced from, like, one of the chippiest women on earth. And she's like, no, he's just too miserable. Like,
yeah. You know? It may be an urban legend in Chicago, but my favorite Jay Cutler story is with some dude. And granted, you're saying hello to somebody in the bathroom. Have a little bit more courtesy than that. But the guy walks up on him, and they're both at the urinal at Harry Carey's in downtown Chicago. And he's like, okay. Jay, I'm such a big fan of yours. Thank you so much for everything you do. And Jay, as he's draining his lizard, just says, I don't care. Around and walks out, which that may be complete BS, but it still sounds so Jay Cutler. I can't help but to tell that story from time to time.
And one of the nicest humans on earth actually had told me something similar. Mm. And this dude, like, I swear by. And when he told me, I'm like, you dead serious? Like, no, I'm being dead serious. It's literally what he said to me. But after watching Eastbound and Down, I become a fan of Kenny Powers. So Jay Cutler, that's his life. We laughed at it. Let's just accept it. You know what I mean? It's like he's an asshole, but he's our asshole. You know what I mean?
There you go. Way to embrace that one. Well, it's a real pleasure getting to talk to you, Evan, not just because of the great job that you and Andre do on the Point Forward podcast, but you guys are a part of this year's South by Southwest Festival. So before we get into the conversation that you get to have here in Austin in a couple of days, have you spent any time in Austin in the past?
So funny. Actually, I believe in like 2015, Avery Bradley, I played with him for the Celtics. And I think we were in San Antonio and we had played a game versus Spurs. And afterwards, we were all like, yo, we're going down to South by Southwest. So we were able to go down, connect with a couple locals, and we hung out on 6th Street. So I was only there for a span of like 12 hours. But being know, living in Columbus, Ohio, you know, that's one of the biggest universities in the country, the Ohio State. I'm well aware how the city, like Austin, is built around, you know, the college and everything. So that was one thing. I always heard great things about it, but showing up, I had a great time. And, you know, Austin is that economy and what's going on there. I'm well aware of how fruitful it is. So I'm excited to, you know, go down there and partake in South by Southwest. I have a reason to do so.
Well, plus, you made a wise decision having Avery Bradley as your host, since he played college ball here. So he knew his way around the city a little bit.
Yeah, no, for sure. He definitely did. We hung out with some guy named Nate. I forgot his last name, but he brought me around. I think you might know Nate. But we had a good time. It was a hell of a time. And I'm excited to go back. I'm looking forward to, you know, hitting up South by Southwest and making memories.
So considering that you guys are speaking with Megan Rapinoe, who is one of the most famous female athletes on the planet right now, what is something that you're most curious to find out about in speaking with her?
You know, just seeing how retirement's going. You know what I mean? I know a couple months ago, obviously she was one of the biggest, you know, athletes, and one, you know, the women's soccer, you know, team, and their legacy has been one of the greatest traditions, you know, in sports history. So, you know, to lose, you know, a legend like that and a figure like that and see what she's going on next and continue her chapter of being more than an athlete, I think this is huge for, you know, fellow athletes to really be on the stage and really promote what's bigger than just the game. And I'm glad to partake in that. And, you know, to really sit down and talk to somebody who's courageous enough to stick her neck out for a greater cause.
A lot of athletes talk about how difficult retirement is, because playing that sport is your life, not just your professional life, but you take it all the way back to childhood in a lot of cases. And just day in and day out, that is what your primary focus is. And when you lose that sense of purpose. Considering that you've been retired for a couple of years now, was there an adjustment for you, and how is that whole thing going for you right now?
I think there was definitely an adjustment. Obviously, the one thing that you miss is when you get money, you're able like to you know, buy a lot of things or have whatever people think. You realize the real luxury is passion. So, like, you know what I'm saying? So when you sit there, imagine, like, you know, you'll see a 4-year-old lose his binky and freak out. So imagine a 33-year-old who played a sport his whole life and, you know, spoiled by the riches of it. Like, you're going to feel a certain type of ways. But I think one thing that occurred, I was fortunate enough to have a great circle around me that even when I was 17, tell me, like, it's bigger than basketball. Even when I didn't want to believe it, I'm like, no, I'm a basketball player. I was like, no, you're bigger than basketball. Basketball is just going to be a chapter of your life. And the older and older I got, it started sounding more normal. And I think one thing that occurred was I was able to adjust towards it. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to get 10 years out of the NBA. I was able to go from seeing some type of depression to being like, yo, let me see the collateral beauty of all this. Mm-hmm. And to be able to say, like, yo, I lived out a dream. I started at 5. I was able to, you know, go do something at a high, high level. And, you know, the average NBA player plays 4.2 years. I played 10. And, I just think it's blasphemy if you don't look at that and say the gratitude behind it. And when you look at the positivity you take from there, it's allowing me to have all this greatness that I'm able to do right now. You know what I mean? And it's just two ways to look at it, half empty or half full. And it's like, yo, if I was able to make it to the NBA, it's only 5,000 NBA players ever make it. There's 8 billion people in the world. Every year, it's only 450 players that play. I'm in a 0.2% of being able to do something, reach my dream. That was a successful chapter of my life. And if I was able to do that, imagine what the next 60 or 70 years are going to be for me. You know what I mean? And the only thing it's done for me was go from having like a sulking 10 minutes to being like, no, I'm a superhuman. Like, what I do next is going to be crazy. Like, I'm up, up, up. I was able to live out my dream from, you live in Chicago, how, you know, segregated could be, how, you know, the system could be, whatever. I was able to, you know, walk the streets of Chicago, taking the bus with 50 cents in my pocket, to, you know, being able to, you know, see the fruits of life and be able to partake in all the great things I want and to see the world outside of that. And that's what I'm going to paint my post-career, something bigger than just what the start was.
That's a beautiful perspective. Thank you for sharing that. And in studying your basketball career, my goodness, man, you've seen some crazy things throughout your life. Just the amount of talent coming out of the Chicagoland area during your time in high school, heading to Ohio State, was wild. You were such a good player for the Buckeyes, but rather than jump on the trend of guys who maybe leave school a year too early, theoretically, you leave school a year too late, but then again, you're the number two overall draft pick. Before we get into the decision of sticking around in college for 3 years, I'm curious, because here in Austin, much as Avery Bradley can attest to, you're the star of the basketball team in Columbus or Austin. You're still second fiddle to the football program, even if they're not good on a given year. So what was it like being the star of a basketball team of a football school like Ohio State?
It's funny. This is where I toot my own horns. I was a big man on campus then. So when you sit there, it's like, I'll sum this up. Drake came to campus and was performing. So yeah, Terrell Pryor's 33-4. The person he brought on stage was me. And that wasn't in a disrespectful sense of like, oh, I'm the man. But like, when you talk about it, like, it's hard to get recognition as a basketball player at a football school. So when you break it down and, you know, what we were able to do as a unit, what we were able to do as a team, and clearly, you know, just whatever God was able to grant me with, I was able to climb to, I guess, the mountain of that success for that year. And college was amazing, man. College was amazing. I didn't leave early because I wasn't ready. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people leave one and done. We even talk about me having some of the greatest statistics in history in college and then going number two pick.
Yeah.
I always joke and people are like, oh, you're a bust. I'm like, no, bro. Do you know how good those dudes were that I played? LeBron is still going. Kevin Durant was a year older than me. Like, you know, like, there's tons of like talent in that league. And when you start to realize it, I was fortunate enough to play during one of the greatest eras of basketball. And that's, like I said, it's a hell of a chapter to be part of and to be able to play on.
What was it like being up on stage with Drake as a collegiate?
I was a kid, so I was super still like green. I was still on the porch, quote unquote. So I remember my guy, David Lighty. I remember showing up to the arena and they were just like, Drake shouted my name out. And then the security was like, oh, Drake wants you on stage. And I was like a very shy kid. So I was trying to bring my best friend up there with me. And obviously you couldn't, you know, come pause, but it was just a surreal moment. I really was up there. It's like, this is my life, I guess. Like, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. It aged well. This is back in 2010. We were still young. So if you look at it now, where he's going to go, I'll tell my daughter, like, hey, back in 2010, your dad was able to, you know, do this and a third.
Listen to you talk about these things and explaining some of this stuff. You strike me as a bit of an old soul. Have you been an old soul your entire life, even going back to childhood? And if so, I guess that does help explain why you didn't make the rash decision that a lot of guys do and chase those NBA dreams, because you yourself didn't feel like you were ready yet. I mean, my goodness, that's a very mature decision for a guy to make who's a late teenage, early 20s, when you got all these things around you and a lot of people around you making all sorts of promises about what the future is going to hold.
Yeah, I don't think being an old soul, I think when I get it right, God just blessed me to get it right. Like, you understand what I'm saying? So, like, because everybody's, you know, human beings are complex. So when you sit there, you're going to have good moments, you're going to have bad moments. I think one thing that I always thought about, which is just me at a distance, was, thinking about legacy. And it wasn't like, oh, what, like, I want to be the greatest this and a third. Like, it's humbly speaking, when I was 15, you know, for whatever reason, it's just like, no, I wanted to make sure that, like, my name meant something. You know what I'm saying? And one thing that occurred in life, you know, before you realize, you know, what all things matter, you think winning matters and you think, you know, breaking records matters and, you know, leaving your legacy at a high level. That stuff is definitely dope, but I really intended to go in and really, no, not so much worry about money, but worry about, like, the legacy of my family name. I have a daughter that's 6 years old right now. So when we go 30 or 40 years from now, she's like, she has kids. So I'm like, yo, we had a granddad that, you know, went harder for the sake of our name. So I didn't think much of it. I just thought, like, the money would come, but everybody can, you know, cop out early. I just wanted to try to win a Big Ten title and, you know, get the most in leave my stamp at that level. So that's really where my mind was at. I had a real chance of leaving my second year, and I just didn't think I was ready. But at the same time, I didn't win a Big Ten title, and I didn't do anything outside of, like, my own accolades. I made all conference, I was all American and stuff. But I just really thought, if you're really on a grand scheme and we could sit back, I wanted a banner up there. And I'm fortunate enough, I was stayed an extra 6 months to do that. So you go back to Ohio State now, it is cool to see what sacrifice does. And like I said, it sounds crazy, but when you come into this life now, everything starts back at, you know, anything worth giving, you know, is worth working for. And I equate some of those moments of patience to that.
You've got a 6-year-old daughter. I have a 9-year-old daughter and a 7-year-old son. What do you think the biggest challenge is for a parent in 2024?
For me, probably it's probably, I think social media monitoring, like some of their iPads and things like that. But I think everybody is kind of distracted. So one thing I got to remember a lot when I get around my daughter is just to be in a presence and be in a moment of just like taking excitement in her first. You understand what I'm saying? Like, she's still 6. So like when she's telling me a story and telling me what's going on, it's like, no, I want to not show up and be like, hey, this is happening, or squeeze her in this. It's like, no, I want to be present in every moment possible and, you know, build that support system. And I think one thing that occurs is not only for distraction for kids, but for adults.
Yes, it is. And you want to be able to cultivate the awe that kids feel. It's important for anybody throughout their lives to experience that awe. When we get older, we get jaded with stuff and we stop doing much new stuff, and we've seen the world, so it's harder to surprise us, but that's still something that's very healthy to go through. Kids are full of that because everything around them is still so new. So to remain present and make sure you're focused on what they're telling you is huge for not just the present, but also for their future as well, because it keeps them curious about things.
Yeah, you just don't want to be a buzzkill. And when you realize it, like, as an adult, like, for me to say I want to be an NBA player at 5, my mom was probably, what the heck? You know what I mean? And I was fortunate enough to dream, live, continue to be as naive as I wanted to be to go in the direction I wanted to go. And I see how it worked out. So sometimes with my daughter, it's like, no. As an adult, it's just like, man, you're not a know-it-all. Like, you're still learning, and there's lots she can teach you. And that's where I really try to open up and, you know, just keep taking that in.
So I've heard you talking about the biggest challenge for becoming a professional basketball player had to do with learning how to be a pro. For somebody who's maybe, gosh, this could be a basketball, an NBA thing. It could just be an entering the workforce thing. Do you have a piece of advice to help somebody better understand how to be a professional once they enter that workforce, NBA or otherwise?
I just think you need to learn and lay of the land. Know the history of what you're going into, you know, kind of enthrall into put 2 feet in. I think when you don't have 2 feet in, when you start becoming a professional, then you start messing up. You're not sold in, nothing's going to happen. I think the number one thing in order to be successful is to buy into the bigger picture, whatever that mission is. And before you're great, you have to be good. And there's just no way around that. And I think sometimes where you're willing to paint by the numbers, that's when you learn. And when you learn, innovation comes from, and that's when you begin to stand out.
A few weeks ago during All-Star Weekend, Adam Silver talked about a number of things, including lamenting the AAU system here in the U.S. and how that's causing American kids to fall a little bit behind their European counterparts. As somebody who's played a lot of AAU ball himself, what did you think of those comments, Evan?
I think it's a mixture because I understand that the trend of when we talk about how the European game is played, the skill set, and, you know, everything. I think the skill set has to continue to keep picking up. I think the game of basketball has gotten so oversaturated because it's just a money market. There's people that don't even have anything to do with basketball that will jump into the game of basketball. One thing I don't want to miss out on is back in my day, you could shoot 40%, but if you couldn't get your shot off, you couldn't play. And if you couldn't play defense, you couldn't play. You couldn't just do one facet of the game and then you're at the highest level. And, like, one thing I told people about when I compare myself to, like, John D. Blue, who was, like, the all-time three-point shooter at Ohio State, or Will Buford, who was, like, the all-time leading scorer when I was there, they're like, what was different? I'm like, I was pretty skilled, but I had a really high competitive drive. Mm. So when we discussed the mano-a-mano or the man-to-man or competition, it wasn't like, yo, you put out 5 and the alpha's going to come out. Now it's like, no, if he can't shoot 40%, he can no longer play. We're going to move the game over to this and do this and the third. We'll say, like, the Americans are falling behind, but I bet we, quote, unquote, will kick the shit out of everybody in the Olympics. It won't even be close.
What do you think the NBA potentially redrawing that three-point line and eliminating the corner three?
Man, dude's a shooter from half court anyway. Like, at one point, I'm like, bro, this is what I will say. The skill set has been crazy where I'm like, bro, dudes are shooting 33-foot jumpers on the rack. And I'm talking about, like, there's like 100 people on the lead right now that are not even looking down at the line. So I'm all for it. I think it's a dope way for the game to expand. I'm just big into just keeping the competition up, like keeping literally the competition up. Like, let guys battle out for their position. Don't say, yo, stick him here because he's 37%. You look at certain dudes that shoot threes and can't hit it when it matters. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So last question here, Evan, because smart people tend to ask themselves a lot of questions. And typically there's one overriding question at a given point in time. You are a very bright dude, as you've proven throughout this conversation, the Point Forward podcast with Andre, and I'm sure elsewhere in life as well. Can't wait to see what that next act is. What is the one question that you find yourself asking more than the others right now?
In regards to interview or just in life?
Just in life.
Shoot, I always, in my head randomly, that why Georgia song by John Mayer always pops up. And you always think, like, you know, you just always wonder if you're on that right path. You know what I'm saying? And I think, am I where I'm supposed to be? Is my intent right? Because, you know, at the end of the day, I've learned that if nothing comes good out of malice intent and nothing comes good out of selfish intent. And that's has really been my journey. And, you know, trying to continue to collab and, you know, understand, am I, you know, making the right move? So I think that's just a joyful question, not like nothing crazy, but it's something cool to ask when I'm exploring, and it allows me to look around and see.
So are you where you're supposed to be, and is the intent right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's probably that for the first time in a long, 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 long time. So it's lit, and I'll be in Austin on Saturday. So make sure you pull up. We're going to do a crazy, crazy, crazy Megan Rapinoe interview. It's going to be super dope. And I think, you know, we'll keep even laying more paths in that direction.
That's right. It is Sunday, Point Forward Live with Megan Rapinoe. It's going to be Evan and Andre Iguodala talking with her about sports issues and issues of life as well. Go to sxsw.com to find out more info. Snag yourself a badge. There are a lot of great panel discussions happening over the next week plus. And this is one of the best, in my opinion. Evan, this has been a real pleasure, man. Thank you so much for the time today. Best of luck with things and safe travels to and from Austin.
Yeah, I appreciate you. And thank you for opening up a line for something deeper than just the surface. That's that matters, especially in certain markets, bro. I might get on certain calls and it's like, yo, Evan, tell me a joke. And it's like, bro, I don't feel like joking. Like, you know what I mean? So like the complexity of stuff is something I'm really appreciative towards. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I know that you tell some of the same stories over and over again. And the point of these conversations is to learn new stuff. And I think that I've learned some new things and I'm better off as a person because of the last 20 plus minutes that we've had a chance to chat. So thank you.
I appreciate that, Trey. Much love, G.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. More of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. Talk to you next time on Books on Pod.